Hello, and welcome to SoberCast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting SoberCast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi, Angel Alcoholic.
Hi, Angel.
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 I feel like the Wizard of Oz back here. I'm Angel Alcoholic. 11-1603 is my sobriety date. It's 15 years if you're not good with numbers like myself. Hi, Fly. So, yeah, I'm nervous and I do not want to be up here, but I learned years ago that I say yes to service, even though the truth is that when Julie asked me, I was like, I might be on vacation. It was like 3 months ago or 2 months ago, she asked, and I'm like, I might be gone. She's like, well, how long do you need to know if you're going to be gone? But I was like, bleep, okay, I'm going to do it. So I'll probably cry because this is really, it's an honor to be of service of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's amazing that the longer I stay sober, that the more I realize that I'm alive, that I've made it this far, because I did not think that I would live to 30, and I got sober at 32. So I just want to say today was super emotional and grateful, and I got to meet a new friend and old friends and just got to be together for somebody celebrating 43 years in the hospital at the VA today. And so a group of us went up there and brought a meeting there, and that's the real deal, right? Like, we surround our people. And so if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, welcome home. This is your family, and I can truly say that because I'm closer to you, even if I don't know you, then you're going to know more about me than my family does. And that's the deal with this thing. And of course, I'm nervous and all that stuff up here, but the truth is that it's not about me. It's about hopefully that somebody hears something in here that, that will help for even 10 minutes when you leave here to stay sober. And I'm just thinking, St. Patrick's Day, nobody's going to be here, but it's like, where do you go when you're an alcoholic? So that was wishful thinking. I'm just going to, and then I have to say so the person that brought the meeting got new lungs, right? And then my friend, who's also a veteran, I used to work in a homeless shelter. I'll get into that stuff. But he's dying of COPD, and he happened to be in the same unit. He's not going to die there. He's going to do death with dignity at home, and I'm going to have the honor of holding that man's hand. He was in the same unit and today, and so it was cool because I got to bring some of us. He's I can't qualify him, but we, you know, brought him down, and people got to say hi, and he loves that. He loves the attention. But so it was just, my life is really all about contrast, like new lungs, old lungs, AA, not AA. I'm really big in the service. And ever since I was little, I have been. I don't know, it's because my mom was an alcoholic and I just wanted to leave the house or not be there or trying to get the love I wasn't receiving at home. My mom is physically and emotional abusive, and I learned really young how to be a really good actress because I had to gauge how I was going to be in the house, how she was, how drunk she was, how hungover she was, whatever it was with her. And I was angry for a long time at my mom about me being an alcoholic because it was her fault. I blamed her for everything my whole life, and I realized today, you know, shortly even after doing the work and I did my fifth step, is that she's an alcoholic too, and she did the best she could. And I had a child. I got pregnant at 14, had a child at 15, and I was well on my way. I ran away at 13. And my mom got clean at that time, and I ran away because she was worse sober, not doing the steps. And we got in another physical confrontation, and I went upstairs, and my dad came up, and it was the first time he raised his hand to me, and he says, if you make your mom drink again. And then I was like, grabbed my Cabbage Patch doll and my suitcase, and I ran away to my friend's house down the street, and I stayed in school for a minute, and then I started dating the guy who sold acid at school, and then I was gone. And my parents didn't know where I was, and later I called, I think I was 15 then, I called home, and my little brother answered and said, the Green River Task Force is looking for you, and mom and dad are getting a divorce. And so I was like, oh, it's all my fault, like, it really is true that kids think when parents get a divorce that it's their fault, which that was a new experience for me because I really didn't care about her. I tried to poison her at one time. I used to have to get her, true story, I used to have to get her pop. I was her maid. I had to get her soda, and I put everything under the kitchen sink in there to try to kill her. I was really hurt. Like, that little child in me is still today, that's what I'm working on. And, she smelt it, and this is when she was sober. She smelt it, and it was, of course, it was my fault. The dishes still had soap in it, and, you know, she'd tear all the dishes out of the thing, and I was just like, damn. So I had to get a new glass, but I'm probably going to be all over the place because that's just my brain. These are my mug shots. I carry this on me because I didn't always look this good, but this is, if you want to see these after, they're kind of like, holy cow. And I got these because I take a meeting into King County Jail. And so while I was there, I was like, hey, can I get my mugshot? And then I carried my detox picture too. That one's pretty hot. They used to tease me at the front desk at Lakeside with my Polaroid. You know, they take a picture, you know. And they said they'd put it on the floor at night to keep the rats away. And I was like, good thing I had thick skin kind of then. Crazy, but I want to read. Oh, my God. That's what happens when you get old. In recovery, you gotta get glasses and stuff. So this is like, this is my favorite part of the book, and it's just so true for me. And that when I got here, I didn't feel like I had anything to offer anybody. I grew up in a place where I was never enough, didn't have enough, not smart enough, pretty enough, any, all of the fill in the blank. And I really didn't like myself. And I was always in fight, flight, or freeze. And usually it was fight. And usually with my family, or usually it was fight with my family, I would flight. Like, I couldn't be in that house. And so this is on 124, the family afterward. It says, showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. To me, that's just super powerful because this is life and death. So when I got sober, I didn't know what to do with myself, and I had a sponsor who says, go back to school because you don't think you're smart. And I'm like, but I did what she said, because when I got here, I came in suicidal, tried to take my life many times, obviously didn't work. And so I went to North Seattle, and I'm not good with numbers by any means. And so when I missed some school, the math class, I just gave up because that was me. I was like, if I can't do something right, I'm not going to do it. But before that, I was getting good grades. And so also part of my story is that I was a hooker forever, started really young, and I've walked the streets. I had an escort service. I had my own website. I've walked the streets. I've, like, in the States, like, started over, all that stuff. And it was funny because in the hospital, some guy went by his last name that was Hooker. And when they called him, I was like, which is weird because I never went by Hooker. Like, hey, Hooker. I prefer the term escort because it sounds so much more classic. So when I went to treatment, didn't stay sober, tried to kill myself, got into an Oxford house, my land angel over there. I had 5 days sober, and my mom took me in for the first time. She had been sober for a minute, and she was taking care of my daughter, the one that I had at 15 for, she was 17 at the time that I got sober. And she took me into her house, and she brought me Reese's peanut butter cups and stuff for leg cramps because I did other things other than alcohol. and I was really, really sick. And so my 17-year-old got to watch me be sick. And my mom and my grandma just tried to do the best that they could. And my mom didn't understand that the state of Washington had kind of changed, because she used to work in the treatment business and thought she could take me into the welfare office and, like, get me in the treatment. And, of course, you have to make an appointment for the doctor. I knew what it was like, and I'm very dramatic, and I was very sick at 5 days trying to hold myself up. And so I'm yelling at the people, I'll just go kill myself in the bathroom. And my mom's like, shut up and sit down. And it was the first time that she had tried to help and that she showed up, because I was going to end my life. And I called my land angel over there, and he showed up with my mother. And the police came, and I was going to jump out my window. I wouldn't have died, but I was going to jump. I don't know what I was going to do. And I was really mad because I thought I was going to go back to prison because I had drugs. And they said that's not the case. And they put me in an ambulance and took me to Harborview. And that was worse than King County Jail. And so I talked my way out of that. And I was going to go back to my little apartment that I had up in Cap Hill and work and get well. And somebody was sitting outside the emergency room and didn't let me do that. And my mom opened her door. And so my friend, she had hung herself, but before that, she lived in this Oxford house, and she got me into the house for 5 days in Federal Way. That was really far from my stomping grounds, and I hated it there because I had got out of prison, and I didn't want to be around women. I didn't trust them. I didn't like my mom, so I was really close with a lot of females. I always felt very judged, and my own perception was skewed, right? And it was probably like I held everybody far away. And I went to Catholic school from first to fifth grade. And I remember my first day in sixth grade, these girls were looking down the thing. We're all in gym or something. And they were talking about me. And so I just flipped them the bird. And I was like, welcome to public school. And so that was kind of how it went with, I was a loner, right? Because I was a hooker and I was alone a lot. But, well, I am. not really, I made good money, I got to my first Oxford house and I hated it, but my sponsor said, you need to start talking to the women in the house and, like, don't call me all the time, like, talk to them. And then I'd say, like, there's a bulimic in the bathroom, there's a crazy lady over here, and she's like, go talk to him, go ask what's up. And one lady, her parents just died, she goes, tell that woman to write a letter to her parents and then read it to you if she's willing. So she had me doing all this stuff that I thought was crazy, but she told me what the result would be, and it worked. And so I started to trust her little by little. And she'd also tell me things like, when you go to the gas station, you ask the person behind the counter what their name is and how their day is. When you go to a restaurant, you ask the server what their name is. And to this day, I still do that. And it's amazing. If you don't talk to the server, if you do and you ask them about their life, how they light up, because those people get ignored a lot. And in sobriety, I've been known to, like, cuss people out that treat servers bad. So it's, like, just rude. But not perfect in this at all. But So, like I said, I've been to jail multiple times. I've been to prison. I've had 3 children. One at 15, 17, I put him up for adoption because I didn't want to be on welfare and have 2 children. I knew where my life was going. And it's an open adoption. And today, my friend who, I'm very, very forgetful. And so I'm always, like, going to text this person that might be able to help me get in contact with him, because, of course, through my many geographical movements that I lost my paperwork. And so I've been in touch with the guy, and he's trying to help me find him now. And he will be 30 in April. And so, and then at 26, I thought it was a good idea to ask my dealer to help me stop, because I hung out with some bikers in Marion, and when I went there, they were all on methamphetamines, which I thought was way worse than what I did. And when I walked in, they're like, oh my God, you look like death, like, you're gray. And I'm like, what the? And then I was horrified that those people thought I looked bad. And I was like, whoa, tweaker. Not that I never did that stuff, because I did. I did everything. But I used my money for what I liked, and then I did what you had. And so I asked this person to, like, help me, and he is not one of us. He should probably be in the sister program. But basically, he kidnapped me and held me hostage in my own house. And then he took me to his mother's house. And That was really terrifying, actually. And so I escaped one night, and he came and found me and kicked down the door. And the next thing I know, I'm in Vegas. And then a month later, I'm kind of feeling good, but I'm doing other stuff. And then we ended up at a pawn shop. He bought a ring, got down on his knee, and I thought, this guy saved my life. So he asked me, and I'm like, yes, like, how romantic. And so I didn't really know him, and he was a con. And when he met me, I was really, really sick. Like, not, like, I looked like the jail pitcher. So when I got a little sober, I was like, well, this guy's really sick, like, predator, really. And so I ended up pregnant, and that's my, she's 21, and she's in my life, and we have a good relationship, and today I get to show up, and, you know, I get to tell my children. My oldest doesn't talk to me. She's decided that at this time in her life, she doesn't want to, and when I got sober at 32, she was 17, and I started to see her weekly, and she was okay, and then she had the love of her life die, and it, something changed, and so, and I got to tell her, like, I totally get it. I didn't like my mom. I don't know how to be a mom. I was not taught that, and not making excuses for not me being there. But I got to just tell her stuff. And I had already made amends to her prior to this. And my younger daughter is different. And I don't know how to be a mom. I wasn't mothered. Okay, I want to talk about, like, what my life is like today. So when I got sober, I wanted to do some stuff, and I didn't make it through school. And so I was living in an Oxford house, another Oxford house. Because of my crimes, I couldn't live in that fancy place up in Twin Lakes or whatever, thank God. But I was lucky because my sponsor met me every day. And we used to read at Denny on Market Street, which is sadly not there anymore. I started volunteering. So I live in Oxford. I watched Animal Planet. I loved the, I wanted to be a veterinary technician. And so this girl in my house went to an interview at a veterinary hospital, and she came back and she's like, oh my God, they wanted me to pick up poop or whatever. And I'm like, really? You didn't take the job because of that? Like, so I went up there and I'm like, I'll pick up poop. I don't care. And so I got the job, and then I was very, on them about, like, I can draw blood, I can do that, like, let me. And so when I did, they were like, oh, you're really good. I quickly moved up and was a vet tech, and I got to do, like, x-rays and dentals and, like, just things that I never knew. And before that, I volunteered, thank God, at Paws Wildlife, and which I love because I love nature and I love animals, and there's bald eagles, and they're like, don't make eye contact with wild animals, whatever. And I'm all like, I see God in that. Every time I see a hawk or an eagle or something, it's like, I just, it's like, hey God, because that's where I, you know, I see God in here and I hear God in here, but in nature is my happy place. And so we had to feed these little chipmunks with a syringe, obviously not needle, and the food was brown. And I was having a panic attack, like, with this little thing. And then I just had a moment. I had, like, 90 days sober. And I'm like, oh, okay, God. Like, you're showing me there's another use for this. Like, it can save lives. And so that was my journey of, like, okay. And then I got to work at the clinic. And I had an ex-boyfriend that did the same thing as me. And he walked in because I had to go in on Sundays and treat the animals because we weren't open Sundays. And there was boxes and boxes of syringes from little tiny to like 60 millimeter. And he just stood there like, how do you work here? And I'm like, I've done the work. Like, this has been lifted. The obsession to use has been lifted for me a long, long time ago. And I tried testing that a couple times. And I lived in Oxford early on. And I'd get really upset about something probably really stupid. And I would go to Broadway, and I'm like, here's the deal, God. I'm like, if I go out there and somebody offers me stuff, like tries to sell it, that's a sign. I'm going to do it. And I had quit smoking at the time. And so I went up there, and somebody offered me pot. And they got cussed out. I was a superman. I'm like, are you crazy? All the times I lived up here, pot. Nobody ever tried to sell me weed up on Broadway before. And so I was like, okay, God, I get it. Bought a pack of cigarettes and went home. Did that twice. I know there was a higher purpose for me to be here. And Today, so through like that job, I sat at that job for 3.5 years and people cried when I left. And the only reason I left that job is because I was sitting in a meeting and somebody told me they worked with the homeless, and I'm very passionate about the homeless. And when he went to the bathroom, I stuck my foot out and I'm like, what do you do? And we talked after the meeting, and I went to the Salvation Army up in Everett and fed people at a meal. And the officer, captain, he watched me talk to the homeless people outside, and he's like, you want a job? And I'm like, doing what? Because I didn't know you could, like, get paid to homeless people. I didn't understand. No life skills. And so he said, well, you sponsor, you know, you knew my story. He's like, well, you sponsor people. Case management's the same thing. So I came and followed a case manager, and I was like, I totally want to do this, but I need to give my job, like, a month at least. And it was just amazing because coming from a place where you don't think you have anything to offer, and then your boss, I still have the letter. She wrote this incredible letter about me. And for some reason in my brain, even still today, I think people don't like me. I think people, when I left the Salvation Army, when I resigned after 7.5 years, I thought they didn't like me. And when the duck crash happened, the guy that he bugged the bleep out of me, he actually called and said amazing nice things about me. And I'm like, why do I think people don't like me? Like, why am I, what is that in there? And at the Salvation Army, so I got my GED in prison, and I was writing grants there, which I don't know how to do. I had help. The people in Snohomish County, that the lead in HUD, would come and sit by me and help. Like, that community in Snohomish County is really good with the homeless because it's smaller. But I moved down here to King County and worked at the William Booth Center, and was a programs manager over tons of vet programs and Fair Start, and I was the boss of like 12 guys at the front desk and got to hire them. And it was just amazing. And like the principles of this stuff and the steps and the things that you guys have taught me, I was a good employee. I was a good employer. I like, just got to, I passed this stuff on through all my stuff. And so while I was there, I started doing yoga myself, and then swore I'd never go to school again. But the training was coming up to be a yoga instructor, and I asked the owner, like, what does it look like? Like, what's the test? Like, do I have to speak Sanskrit? Because that is not happening. I'm not going to own it out. I'm not, that's just not my, I can't, I'm like trying to set myself up for failure. Like, I can't do it. She goes, the exam's like this. And I was like, I can't do it. And but the men at the William Booth Center, like the veterans and stuff, and I got so much out of yoga myself. I'm like, these guys, you know, these guys could really use it. And so I took it, and I was done with the test first because I was so nervous. And obviously, I became a yoga instructor. And I asked my boss if I could turn the conference room and to take the carpet out, and we donated the floor, and I got yoga mats donated, and I started teaching yoga. And they want you to, like, come in with a theme and, like, have a class plan. And those men taught me that, you know, you teach the person, not the pose. You know, my friend that's in the hospital, Ellen, he came in with an oxygen tank. And I'm like, what the hell did I do with that? And then, you know, I had vets with no limbs. I had all kinds of people, mental health. And they're my teachers. You know, when I'm in class, I'm, like, forever your student, because I am. And I'm that way everywhere in my life, like in here. This is my textbook. This is the big basic text for my life and how to live. And in here it talks about, you know, this will solve all your problems. It solves all my drink problems. It solves, you know, I've done the steps many times, and I've done sister group stuff, and this book is magical. Every time I read it, it's something new. The first 164 pages have saved my life, and I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and she's my hero. And today, because of that inner little me, there's things that happen in my life. Like I have PTSD, and I didn't really realize it because this part of my brain is like so closed. And I have sexual trauma in my life that I did not even, you know, realize that happened until now, to 15 years. Like, I was out on the streets in California. The dude didn't pay me, so I thought I got ripped off. But no, it was rape, right? And that is crazy to think that I either deserve that or that that didn't happen to me. And so I have outside help, and it talks about that in this book. And I just have to say that because, I mean, there's other traumas. I've been held up at gunpoint, the stuff, motorcycle accident, there's just a lot of stuff. My mom, all the stuff, we have stuff, right? And for me, the little person in here is like, comes out, and it's like, I finally figured out why I'm so quick to anger. It's because, you know, that person in here is just trying to protect themselves. And I hate third person talk or whatever, but I do have an inner child that's super broken. And I don't like feelings. I mean, when I first got sober, I was like, I want to be just happy. That's it. I don't like this woo-hoo. You know, I went to the doctor when I first got sober and they're like, you're bipolar. And I'm like, no, I'm not. But I thought that I was. And so I was going to take this medicine. But then I started to go into the gym again because I had stopped working out. And then I went to the gym and I'm like, oh, this could be for Cocoa Puffs. I need to, like, my brain needs to move. And that's another important thing is, like, I got sober, I moved my body, it's mind, body, and spirit, not just all in the, it's like physically, right? I didn't get sober to kill myself with food. I want to be a better person, so I'm always doing the stuff, and by no means do I do it perfect. I'm not a perfect mom, I'm not a perfect sponsor, I'm not a perfect sponsee, I'm not the perfect, well, maybe fiance. I'm going to get married June 5th, and that's a trip. Hooker to housewife. Your dreams can come true too, ladies. He's actually my Richard Gere. That's kind of how we met. So there's that. I always say our story is like Sid and Nancy, Sex Pistols for you. But no, Sid and Nancy meets Pretty Woman. But there's something else I wanted to read. Jesus, I don't even know where I'm going. But this program's amazing. So I don't like to, my experiences is that I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. That sponsor kind of had a meltdown. I was so nervous. I got another sponsor. I started over in the book. That layer of the onion thing, I hated that one the most, but it was so true for me because I got a new sponsor a couple times and every time I wanted to start over in the book, every time. And I didn't get all the way through. I got to the 9 steps a few times. A couple of sponsors made it all the way through. I've had the sponsor I've had now for a long time, and we're working in another book, and it's helping me, and it's pretty deep. And I have another sponsee that we're reading that same book, and it's like in little chunks, right? Like this is just the beginning, and I have 15 years. And if you're new, you don't have to, you know, hopefully. I don't know. Everybody's journey is their journey. I just hope you stay here long enough to figure that out. But what else? There was something I wanted to read. Maybe I won't find it. Maybe there's a reason. I'll read what my sponsee gave me because it was an awesome bookmark from Bill's house. Shoot, if I can read it, I hope I can pick that up, whatever, back there. So these are the four paradoxes. We surrender to win. We give away to keep. We suffer to get well. And we die to live. And I would read the small print, but I can't see it. The rest is really good. So I have a minute and 34 seconds, but I'm just going to be done. I'm just super grateful. Hopefully that kind of made sense and that, happy St. Patty's Day. And yeah. Thank you for asking me to come, even though I didn't want to do it. And like, I'm spitting out and all the great stuff. So don't hug me. I'll be hugging you like this. Just kidding. Anyway, thank you. I'm done.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.